You're listening to Careers and Cocktails, Career Talk with a Twist, hosted by expert recruiter Renee Fry. Let's get this party started.
Hey, party people, welcome back to Careers and Cocktails. And today I am overjoyed to have Ruzana Glazier, who is with us today, and she's going to share a little bit about herself, but she brought this vodka straight from Russia, people. We are taking it up a level here. So tell us about yourself.
Yeah. So professionally, I'm a sourcing professional, and I'm a negotiation expert in my field. And my passion is helping women negotiate on their own behalf.
I love that passion.
So those are really who I am.
But you're originally from Russia, right? Like, tell us, when did you come to the United States?
All right. So I won a U.S. government scholarship in 1999.
Congratulations.
Thank you. To come to the United States and finish high school. So I came in 1999 and I stayed.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. So I cannot even pronounce this.
Yes.
Tell us, what are we drinking? And then you have to see how she opens this bottle. I've never seen anything like this in the U.S.
So hopefully we won't be drinking this straight up, but
we won't be. Although I'm tempted to try it straight.
Yeah. So this is, you can later. It's called Georgievskaya vodka. So it's a Russian Georgian vodka. I don't know why it's called. Probably somewhere it's produced. So this is straight from Russia. My parents lived in Russia up until 4 years ago when my dad passed. So we would just get constant resupply of Russian vodka when we would see them. And then I go to Russia every couple of years. So every time I go, you bring a few bottles back. And the beauty is vodka doesn't go bad. So you stick it in the freezer.
And yeah, freezer.
You're good to go. Yeah.
She's blowing my mind. Yeah. All right, let's open it.
All right. So
what a treat.
Well, thanks. All you do is just twist, I believe.
Yeah, and so like a plastic spout is coming out of the top, but the lid isn't coming off. So we're going to pour it.
Yeah, and in Russia, you know, most of the liquor in the United States, like vodka, you just unscrew it.
Yeah.
In Russia, a big thing is have like filters.
Oh,
and, like, once you even unscrew it, to have filtering
and so that's technology what's in there. Okay. So. All right. Well, and her drink of choice today is a perfect Cosmo. So what the drink calls for, and I love Cosmos, 2 ounces of vodka, and we're using the direct from Russia vodka, half an ounce of Cointreau, or you can use Triple Sec or Grand Marnier, but we're going to use Cointreau, 3/4 ounce cranberry juice, and then 1/4 to 1/2 ounce of fresh squeezed lime juice. We put it on the shaker and then we pour. So let's get this started. We're going to take the cold vodka, which now I know to store my vodka in the freezer.
It doesn't freeze.
Oh, how many ounces is it?
Just keep on pouring.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to make 2 drinks. So we need 4 ounces of vodka. Thank you so much for sharing this with me.
Absolutely.
I'm so excited. It's not every day that you get to drink authentic Russia vodka that you can't buy in the States. Okay, 2 ounces of vodka. Now we're moving to the Cointreau. And it's 1/2 ounce, so I'm going to do 1 ounce. That was a quick, way quicker pour than the vodka. There's no filter on the Cointreau. And then cranberry juice.
I have to learn how to make this.
3/4.
In Russia, a lot of people don't mix vodka with anything because that's considered, you know, kind of spoiling the product.
Oh.
So.
All right. Cran. And then fresh lime, which I think is already measured out. And we'll dump that in. And away we go. Shake it all up. And now I'm going to pour equal parts this time because I always pour more in one than the other. So I'm going to do a little at a time. Ooh, it's so pretty pink.
I know.
I love Cosmos.
Perfect.
Yeah, because I normally mess it all up and pour one really full, and then the other one is like half. I didn't do too bad that time. No, I think I've improved.
Pretty good.
Awesome. Let's check it out.
Success.
Oh, yum.
That's really good.
That's delicious. Cheers. So, Rosanna, what are we celebrating, or what can we help you celebrate this week?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think I'm going to go with achieving new goals.
And which goal did you achieve?
Yeah, so a couple of years ago, actually, my kids started learning how to ski, downhill ski.
Oh, fun!
I've never been on skis in my entire life. And then they've graduated from like Bunny Hill to the hills that we could no longer see from the chalet. And I
Black Diamonds?
Yep, pretty much. So 3 years ago, I looked at my husband and I said, I want to go ski with them. So that's what we decided to do. And then this year or last week, I have finally graduated to Black Diamonds.
Woo!
So, now it's on at Afton, hey. So I know it's not like...
Hey, there's no shame in
Afton. No, not at all.
Congratulations.
So yeah, I just dream big, even when you're an adult.
Absolutely. Yeah. I got to tell you, this vodka is so good. It is so smooth.
Good.
It is delicious. I'm going to be drinking that whole thing. So pretend I'm a kindergartner, yes. Rosanna, and what do you do for a living?
That's really hard to explain. And I have a 7-year-old, so she's a first grader, and she thinks what I do is completely different from what I do. So I'm going to keep it super simple.
Yep.
What I do for a living is I know how to ask people for what I want and get it.
I love it.
Yep.
And tell us, how can our listeners ask for what they want and get it? Because I'm sure they all want the pay raise. They all want the promotion.
Yeah.
They all want to negotiate their next, you know, their next position and income.
Yeah. So you tell me how you want me to structure this. But
you just flow.
Just flow. Okay. You know, one of the things that we have to realize is that we negotiate all the time. And if we're not, then we should. The best thing to really do is kind of start understanding what that process looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people that I work with, when we start having conversations on how to ask effectively on your own behalf for a raise or promotion or whatnot, a lot of people don't even know what they want. And it's really, really hard to ask for something if you don't know what you're worth or what you want or what you're looking for. Because if you don't know it, you're not going to get it.
They'll be able to read it all over you. You won't have that confidence.
Well, and you're then asking what other people want for you. And that's a great opportunity for misalignment.
Yep.
So I think the most important thing in negotiation is to know what you want, to know what you're worth. That's a starting point.
Do you help people figure out their worth and know what they want?
Yeah. So yes, I do. The worth part is actually not that hard to figure out, right? Because we all have skills, we all have experiences, we have potential.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people forget to take the potential into the account. So then we work with that. The harder part is get people to realize what it is they want. Because that's kind of a self-discovery part.
Absolutely.
So I can't, that's really something that people have to figure out, and I can guide them through it. But it has to be on them as to what is valuable to them.
Sure.
And it can be different in at different stages in the career, too.
Absolutely. Okay, so Rosanna, I know exactly what I want. I want a 10% raise.
Yep.
From my current employer.
Yeah.
How do I get it?
So that's super, that is so common when people come and say, when they have a new offer or if they have a current job and they say, I want a 10% raise. And the very first question that I ask, why 10%? Mm-hmm. What is it about 10% that makes you think that's the right number?
Mm.
A lot of people change jobs and they'll have a good offer and they'll get excited. Oh, I got a 20% raise, right? But is that the right number? So I would strongly encourage people before they get to that number to really understand what are you worth? Mm-hmm. Because you might be worth a whole lot more than 10% raise.
Good point.
So, yes. So I think that's super important. That's something I hear a lot when people are looking at offers.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, it's 10% more or 15% more. Or if it's larger, then it's like hands down, that's the best offer ever. But it might not be.
So how do you find people's worth? Like, obviously I do this for a living. Yes. I know the competitive landscape of certain industries pretty well, but how does a listener find their worth?
Yeah. So it's all in the numbers, right? You should be able to quantify what you're worth. And we'll look at, first of all, we'll look at the market, right? And we take a look at what is something. So, and it's not, I would discourage people to look at the titles and try to figure out what the position really entails.
Absolutely.
Because titles get inflated and deflated depending on the company.
Well, and every organization has their own naming scheme of titling, when in one company, an operations manager might mean something different in another company. Absolutely. And people get stuck, I think, so much on the title. Well, this is my title.
Yep.
It doesn't matter. To the external market, that might not resonate with your skills and abilities.
Exactly. So we'll look at the roles and responsibilities to make sure that we're looking at the right market segment. Mm-hmm. And then there are, you know, people can do this on their own. There are plenty of websites where you can go, and once you have that alignment on the title and roles and responsibilities, you can take a look as what does the market dictate in that area? And you have to look at the area. I just had a conversation with somebody and they're like, well, the national average.
No. Yeah.
We're in Twin Cities.
Right.
They're, you know, the market is hot. National average is irrelevant.
Right.
So you look at your numbers as like, what have you done? And then you look at what you bring to the table. Mm-hmm. And you have to look at the potential, because an employer is going to hire you for what you get to come and do, right?
Absolutely.
And a lot of people discount the potential. A lot of people say, I'm going to get in and take this offer, and then in a year, I'll show them, and we'll negotiate then.
I hate that.
And the problem is, me as a hiring manager, too, in a year, I'm going to have a budget to account for.
Right.
And the other part, too, is you have no idea what the market is going to do in a year.
Absolutely.
You don't know how the company is going to do in a year. So that is so uncertain in the future. So I would say find what you've done. Look at the market analysis. Look at what you've done and, mm-hmm. you know, put a number to it. Are you above average performer? Are you an average performer? What is your potential? What can you bring to the company? But then the other piece is start asking questions. You know, the market analysis gives you kind of a data-driven number, mm-hmm. but we all have friends, we all have connections, we all have networks. Hopefully we have all mentors. So
absolutely. If you don't have a mentor, get one today.
Right. So I have asked people who are my mentors or people who have held my position in the past or at a similar company and just say, hey, for somebody in this position with mm-hmm. these roles, what would be a good range, you know, to have the salary in? And I would ask people who are in the position, so because then they're going to give you an anchor, if you will, of what they're making roughly.
Right, exactly.
And I would I work with women primarily on negotiations. And I would say if you are a woman, make sure you ask men the same question. Because I know a lot of women feel comfortable asking other women, but not necessarily men. And since women are already underpaid, mm-hmm. Statistically proven, make sure you ask men. But ask around, right? That'll help you true up where you are. And then we kind of disregard outliers go from there. So data is super powerful. Knowledge is irreplaceable. So get to know and quantify what it is you bring to the table and sell yourself.
Great advice. I love it. Yeah. So when I was at Target, it took me 1 year to negotiate a raise.
Yep.
And I brought tons of data, my performance review, you know, all of that. But it took me 1 year. So how can people expedite?
Yeah. Well, my question is, what do you think held you back during that? What do you think took so long?
I think it was budgetary. Yep. Internally.
Yep.
And then, I mean, when my boss at the time told me, like, she was totally on board, and she said they had to go get SVP approval. I nearly fell over in my chair. I'm like, the SVP of a Fortune 30 company? Like, seriously? She doesn't give a shit about little Renee Fry executive recruiter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But that's what they told me.
Yeah.
And so I just stuck with it and was adamant about it, and I didn't give up, and I did finally get the raise. But it took 1 whole year.
Yeah. So I think that's, we kind of talked a little bit about preparation stage, right, and the process of that. The next step is really critical in that, setting expectations. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think that you should start having a conversation at the time of the performance review. In reality, a performance review, everything is locked, right? At that point, it's really hard to make a big jump. You might negotiate a couple percentages up or down, but hopefully not down. But it's really hard to make a great leap. So I really recommend figure out when the budgeting starts so you can have a conversation with your superior and your manager before that.
Right.
So when they go in and start looking at their budgeting, they already know that they have something to account for.
Right.
And you're preparing. The other part is when you start having those conversations, I am all for transparency and honesty. Know when to disclose what information, but it has to be based on trust, right?
Right.
And it's really critical to say that, hey, this is what I'm looking for. What is the timeline that we're going to implement? And can we agree on that?
Smart.
So, because then you're setting the expectation.
Right.
And if it's a year, maybe you would have had a different path, right? If
right.
It would take that long. So,
well, and to be honest, Rosanna, I don't know if I set the expectation.
A lot of people don't. And a lot of people don't set expectation even going into a meeting, right? A lot of managers are like, yeah, let's have a meeting. Let's have one-on-one. And then it's like, I want a raise. It's like, okay.
Right.
So I think it's important to even just as you start sending an invite and say, I want to talk about my compensation and
right.
Here's the agenda that I want to discuss.
Right.
That super simple bullet point, but that way, there's not a whole lot of defensiveness going on.
It's interesting. So I'm thinking back to that.
Yeah.
And I didn't set the expectation because my mindset at the time was Target Corp's in control.
So I love that. This is great.
Yeah. So how do we get listeners to change that mindset of I'm in control of my
career? Super. That's perfect.
Common.
Pivot to, one of the things, a lot of people ask me, what's your biggest pet peeve? Mm-hmm. Right. And when I work, I love what I do, but I have pet peeves. My biggest pet peeve is that when you negotiate, there's this notion that one party is doing you a favor.
Right.
Often, whether you negotiate with suppliers or whether you're negotiating with with your manager for a raise, there's this feeling that, well, they're doing me a favor. They're employing me. They're in control. And it's business. Nobody is doing anybody favors.
Mm-mm.
I do a good job. You compensate me for a job well done.
Mm-hmm.
Target Corp isn't going to hire Renee because, they want to do the best for Renee. They're going to hire Renee because they see what Renee can do for them.
Right.
So stop thinking that they're doing you favors. Stop thinking that this is anything but a business transaction. You're in charge of your own destiny.
Absolutely.
So
that's a big mind shift, though. Like, I tell candidates, I said, I hate to break it to you, but you're a cog in the wheel of the machine. But this is great.
Well, and the other thing, too, to keep in mind, and it took me a long time to get there, is we all think that other people are paying attention. And in reality, if you're content with where you are and what you do, the assumption, even with me as a manager, the assumption is everything is great.
Right.
They're content. There are very few companies or managers who do things proactively and make sure that their employees are compensated well within the market. There are some.
Right.
Those are the
10%.
It's rare, right? So
the 10% of phenomenal leaders out there.
So I think you just have to, it's a mind shift, and just know that nobody's doing anybody favors, right?
Absolutely.
It's an exchange. It's a trade.
Total exchange. So are there any steps we're missing at the end of the you've got like this
so,
this whole thing right. laid out for us. Are we
so
missing
you
anything?
So start with preparation.
Yep.
And a lot of people miss on that. A lot of people take so long to kind of muster up the courage to ask that they just forget to think about, what do I need to think about? What do I look at? What is the timing? What do I bring to the table?
Mm-hmm.
So preparation is absolutely crucial. You can botch the execution and still
right.
come out ahead.
Right.
If you don't do preparation, you might as well just give up. So I say prepare.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing is lay out the expectations. You have to do it at the beginning.
Which I didn't do. Boo.
You have to do it at the beginning. And you can reset it because then it's easier to reset those expectations rather than define them later.
Yep.
And then, you know, after that, the whole process of negotiation starts. And that's really just a conversation. It's a dialogue between you and me trying to figure out what is it that you value in me. Mm-hmm. And what value can you give to me in exchange that holds high value to me, right? So mm-hmm. that part, you have to be honest. You have to be transparent. Be careful not to shoot the messenger because sometimes the message will come across, you know, don't punish people Absolutely. For the bad message, right?
Absolutely.
And just it's the exchange is critical. And then at the end, you just summarize and make sure that it gets implemented, right? So again, kind of resetting or summarizing that, hey, here's what we talked about. Here's what we agreed yep. on, whether it's next steps or whatnot, and then set the next milestone.
Absolutely.
That's it.
And it's super rewarding. I mean, I was delighted when I got the raise because I didn't want to leave Target
exhausted,
at the end
probably.
Of the day. No, I was exhausted. And I did the planning very well. I did fail Perfect. At the set expectations, yep. which is probably why it took a year. But
yeah,
and I had a supportive manager and she was phenomenal.
Yeah.
So we're going to shift gears and go on the party bus.
Okay.
So who would you invite?
Oh,
they have to be alive.
Have to be. You know, honestly, so I cheated a little bit. I asked my sister. My sister is my best friend. She's 4 years older. She lives in Germany.
Aww.
I asked my sister, I'm like, who would you invite? She's like, David Bowie. I'm like, you would. I wouldn't. So I would invite her. She is my best buddy.
Oh, and, where would we be? Would we be in Europe on the party
We
bus?
Would be in Europe. We would either be in England or in Germany.
Oh, I love both yes. places. Cheers Absolutely. To that. And what's your sister's name?
Karina. Yeah.
Invite to follow. So tell us about your career journey. So you briefly yeah. touched on how you got to the United States, yeah. but walk us through your career journey and how you got where you are today.
My career journey is kind of crazy. I have always been in the supply chain and the sourcing field, business field, but I worked in the United States. I worked in Russia. I went back and worked for third largest retail company.
Wow.
It was crazy. So I've worked a little bit everywhere. I've worked for retail companies. I've worked for manufacturing. I've worked for Fortune 500 companies. I've worked for small privately held companies. So I've been kind of all over. I think the constant for me is I just want to stay curious and I need a company that recognizes that and challenges it.
Oh, I'm
and
the
then
same.
Allows me
yeah.
to do it.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I've done. So I came to the United States. I finished college here. Finished high school, finished college. And then I got
Did you have to leave your family behind?
Well, it was just me. So
it was
I came
just you.
Yeah, I came
How
and,
do you
yeah.
tell Okay, so you're moving to an entirely yeah. different country. I assume you spoke English at the time.
I did, not nearly as good.
And how old were you when you came?
So I was 15.
And were you petrified? I'd be petrified.
Oh, I was so excited.
Wow.
So you kind of have to know a little bit of my backstory to know why you would be excited at 15 to leave everybody. But I grew up, when I left Russia, my parents were super poor, very poor. My sister and I shared a couch in the living room.
Oh my
so
gosh.
So to me, like in Russia at that time, and I believe it's true today, if you don't have money, you don't have connections. And if you don't have connections, you really don't have a good future, right?
Right.
So my options at 15 were to find a husband who could support me and get pregnant.
Screw that business.
Right?
Uh-uh. So, we're not on that train.
Exactly. So, you know, I kind of looked at it and thought, well, that's not exactly what I want to do. And I grew up watching Beverly Hills 90210 and
me
Melrose
too.
Place,
yes.
right? So I was
yes.
just like, I want to do that instead. I mean, a lot of drama, but
right.
they were rich.
They have rich parents.
I know. So when I came to stay for high school, I was placed with a host family.
Yeah.
And I'm still close to them today, the Clarks. So I was
awesome.
Placed in Lakeville. So far cry from Beverly Hills. But
no
I was
palm
just,
trees.
No. And that's another story. But I was just shocked that, you know, she was a stay-at-home mom. They have two little kids. They had a house. He worked full-time. And I was just like, this is possible? You can support your family and have a good life and go on vacation and be a middle class. And,
yeah,
you know, it was just mind-boggling to me. So when I saw that, I just thought, you know what? I need an education here. So I finished University of Minnesota. They helped me. I stayed with them during my school years.
Cheers and to then, the Clark family. Yes,
they're awesome. Oh, this is good. Anyway.
It's so good. So that vodka.
Is that what it is?
It's so smooth. It's just, it's perfect. This is the perfect Cosmo.
Awesome. So yeah, and then after that, I got hired to work for a Minneapolis-based company at Graco out of Riverside.
Oh yeah, great company.
Great company. And then I had to go back to Russia because when I came here on the United, on the U.S. government scholarship, I had a two-year residency basically saying I have to go back to Russia for 2 years before I could come back. So I went back to Russia and stayed in Moscow and worked for Metro Group, a German-based retail company. It was huge. And then I lived in England, between Russia and the U.S. And then I came into the U.S. and kind of jumped around, to be honest, between different companies. And, you know, I worked for Polaris and Sleep Number and Sportech, which is the company I worked for now. And again, to me, I need to see the company, see the value. And I'm, you know, it's a business transaction to me. So if you keep me happy and value me where I'm at, I'll stay there forever.
I love that.
Yeah.
And so did you miss, like, was it, did you were excited to come?
I was excited to come.
And how about the cultural transition?
Oh.
And was it easy? I mean, I would assume at that age, it's kind of easy because as children, we're kind of, or teenagers, we could be kind of chameleon-ish, you know?
It was not, I don't know. I loved what I saw. The social aspect was very different for me. In Russia, you grow up with a very tightly knit community.
Oh, interesting.
You know, like in my school, from first grade through 11th grade, I was with the same 30 people.
Oh, my.
And then I came to, like, a high school of, you know, class, graduating class of 600. So it's just different. You know, in Russia, we had family friends, and they could just drop in, right? They were driving by, and they decided to stop in. My mom would put a feast on the table, drink some vodka and things like that. So it's very different here, right? You need to make appointments to see your friends. It was just the cultural or the social aspect was very different. And I struggled with that more than I struggled with, you know, the prosperity and the opportunities. Because that part was really exciting,
Hey,
you work hard, you put in a lot, you know, you apply yourself, you have a chance in life.
Absolutely.
But this
you're incredible. You are amazing. Thank you. Cheers to you, girl.
Thank you.
I love it. So tell us, what's the most rewarding part about your job?
Yeah. Well, the most rewarding part of me working with women is obviously the difference. The difference that I see, the difference that I make. So that has a huge purpose. But for me, myself, is negotiations is a very creative process. No two negotiations are the same.
Right.
And until a while ago, I thought, you know, I'm not really that creative because I always associated creativity with arts and music and dance, you know. And it took me a while to realize that, wait a minute, there's a ton of creativity in negotiations. So that part is really fulfilling to me because it keeps me challenged and it allows me to be creative.
I love that.
So.
How about the most frustrating? What's the most frustrating part?
Yes. So we touched a little bit on the favor piece.
Right.
So that that is frustrating for me to see it and observe it. But when it actually comes to negotiations, the most frustrating part is the lack of active listening in our culture.
Oh, nowadays. Gosh. Oh, my gosh.
Because negotiations is all about exchange of the information that you wouldn't have otherwise, right? That process is exchanging the values and understanding where you stand, what's important to you. And so if the other party isn't listening, it's really hard to get across. You know, you set expectations, and if somebody's on the phone or if they're thinking about something else, which you can't control, you don't know what they're taking, and it's really hard to find people who are attentive listeners nowadays, and that's really challenging.
It is, and well, I'm a very attentive listener because I need to know exactly what candidates are looking for so that we can make adequate recommendations on careers and whatnot. And then with, you know, resume writing, career coaching as well, I'm a very active listener. However, the joke in our office is nobody reads email. I'm just like, oh my God, like how many times do we have to send you the same question, like highlight it? I mean, We joke in my office, nobody reads email.
Yeah. No, that's funny. But I think part of, you know, so a lot of times people will, so I summarize. I try to summarize, like, hey, this is what we're agreeing upon, right? And this is what we've discussed. And it's funny because people will go from being inattentive to attentive because they realize that, oh, like, I have to pay attention.
Yeah.
But then as you continue to summarize, then they'll be like, yeah, that's what I just said.
Oh, I know. Like, oh, I know. Okay. It's so frustrating.
But
so how can we be more attentive listeners?
Well, that's a great question. I think the best thing to do is really to listen and not think about your answer, not think about anything that the consequences that the conversation might cause for mm-hmm. you, and just kind of just be present. And amen. I can always tell when people are active listeners because they ask really good questions.
Yeah.
I will say something and they'll say, tell me a little bit more about that, or what made you say that? And you're not gonna have those questions if people aren't listening.
Absolutely.
So, but it's hard to kind of snap back to attention.
I know. But you know what? So I don't know if you're a meditator, but I meditate and that totally helps me be in the present moment.
Yeah.
Because I used to have 3,000 thoughts in my head at all times and I was never truly present. Yeah. And I've been meditating now for 3 years and 10 minutes a day changed my life. Really? I don't have these crazy thoughts.
That's awesome.
And I'm right here
yeah.
in this conversation, yeah. which in the past, I mean, and don't get me wrong, I was like having convulsions for the first few months of meditation because you actually have to sit still, which I'm not very good at. But I have gotten good at it and it's just helped tremendously with that listening piece. Yeah. So,
and I think some things that first of all, people want to help be active listeners, but I say, you know, if you are going into a meeting, it's totally fine to say, you know what, let's put the phones away, or let's not worry about phone calls or things like that. But then also try to schedule meetings early in the morning, right?
Right.
When somebody comes into my office at 4 p.m. to have a conversation that is important, I'm not, like, I'm already drained
right.
for the day. So
you probably have decision fatigue.
So absolutely. So I will want to escape, right? And
yeah.
when we want to escape, our minds are not going to be present.
Right, exactly.
So.
Yeah, we have a no phones rule yeah. for our meetings in my office. However, the watches,
oh,
I should have
I
no
doodle.
No watches and no phones
yeah.
maybe in the future.
I think if you ask questions and if it's a conversation, if, you know, and that's something we can watch for. Am I talking too much? Like, because that's
right.
when I, like, you'll know, I doodle. So you'll notice when I'm doodling and it's like, okay, Rosanna, snap back, right? But if people are engaging and it is a conversation rather than a monologue, that helps.
Right, right. Okay, so with the unemployment rate extremely low,
yeah,
how does that impact negotiating job offers?
Oh my gosh, you should be going crazy negotiating. But honestly, whether it doesn't really matter where the employment rate is what I'll say. I think the reason I say that is that you should negotiate regardless for what you're worth, whether
Absolutely.
It's high or low. But I will say candidates have a lot of options right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So ask for whatever you want.
That's what
right
I say.
Now,
That's
right
my
now
philosophy
is the
too.
Time is,
yep.
you know what? You should ask for whatever you want anyway.
Absolutely.
But now is the time. One thing I will say, we're as I've been hiring, timing. Right? You can throw timing into, like, if you can get hired fast and commit fast, it's so hard. We've had candidates that would get snatched up, you know, after 3 days
oh, I
of
know.
Applying to
it's
us.
Bonkers.
And so I say, you know, that's a huge leverage too.
Mm-hmm.
And make it known. Make it known to the, you know, to whoever you're applying or interviewing with that, hey, I'm a hot commodity.
Right.
If you want me, this is what it'll take.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
Going back to you knowing your worth.
Yeah.
All right. So tell us about Bright Meets Brave and
yes.
how did that start?
Absolutely. So we talked about, you know, me coming to the United States and
yeah.
I saw this land of opportunity where I could make my life and have a financial stability and everything I dreamed of at that time.
Yay.
Yes. And then as I started working and I started, you know, being ingrained with the U.S. culture, I started noticing that even though this is a great country and I still wouldn't be anywhere else, obviously, there were still opportunities for women to advance and women to get to the equity that men hold. So It was kind of gnawing on me for a few years, and then I decided to do something about it. So my sister and I co-founded Bright Means Brave, and our premise is we work a lot with helping women ask on their own behalf, because women, when they ask and negotiate on behalf of others, are just as good as men, if not better. But when it comes to say, I want the raise,
right.
It's a 180. It's
Why
just,
is that?
Well, social gender norms.
Gender
roles,
yeah. Gender roles, which so, I studied in college. Yeah.
So that's why we started Bright Means Brave. But we don't only focus on negotiations, right? We want to help women gain confidence to speak up, ask on their own behalf, and kind of talk openly about differences of experiences in the workforce for women.
Right.
Versus men.
So smart.
But we also want to enlighten men, because I know I have a couple really fantastic mentors, and they're great. They've helped me tremendously. I have a great sponsor, and he has helped me tremendously as well. But they just don't know what they don't know. And
right.
We want to educate men, those who are curious, what is it like for women, and the differences. And
right.
A good example would be, I had a conversation about job descriptions, because when we posted for an opening, or I posted for an opening, I wanted to attract female and male. So I spent a lot of time on the job description.
Oh, just on the verbiage.
The verbiage,
I'm sure.
And qualifications and requirements, wow. Right? And I had lunch with my mentor, and I said, well, just out of curiosity, how much time do you spend on job descriptions? And he said, probably as much as people read them, spend on reading them. And I'm like, women read every single bullet point and check whether they have met that
right.
requirement. But guys don't. And it was just kind of,
oh,
and
yeah.
So as we are talking, he's like, I didn't realize that. And he's phenomenal. He's a phenomenal person, but he doesn't have that experience, right?
Right.
How often do you talk about reading job descriptions with somebody or creating them? So that's our mission at Bright Means Brave, is help women gain confidence to ask on their own behalf and talk about differences openly, and then also educate men so they're aware, so that when they want to implement changes, it's going to be something that's effective.
Absolutely. Cheers to that, Rosanna. I love it. So you talk about confidence in women.
Yes.
What are some quick pointers you can give to any female listeners?
On the confidence?
Yeah, because my dream, this is my ultimate secret dream.
Yeah.
Because I'm super confident. And I've even had people say, gosh, the words you're saying, you sound like a man. And I said, no, I'm Renee Fry. I'm just I'm who I am.
Yeah.
And my goal, if I could spread my confidence throughout the entire world, to every single person, I would.
Right.
Like, if that was my superpower, I'd love to hear some tips.
You know, for me, I've read a lot of research on the confidence, and a while ago I'm like, oh, apparently there's a difference between confidence and self-esteem, which, so we don't touch the self-esteem part, because I can't, you know, I'm not a therapist.
Right. But that's unpacking everyone's shit is the self-esteem piece.
I think everybody should have a high self-esteem, because it's a lot easier to get to confidence from there. But to me, confidence piece, people don't have confidence when they don't know. Right? They don't know the outcome. There's an unknown somewhere. And to me, the confidence piece is really just about knowledge. And it could come from either just, you know, book knowledge and talking to mentors or coaches and help you get there.
Sure.
Or it could be from experience, right? So if you've done something, like I know, looking back, my first negotiation with my host family to sponsor me was messy. Not, you know, it had all the key elements now that I look back at it, but I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And then as I got interested in negotiations, because it intrigued me, I fine-tuned that skill.
Sure.
But back then I had fear. I had no confidence, right? And then as I kept doing it, I had very high confidence, because I know what I'm doing. I know what to expect. I know I can pivot. I know I can, impasse without any fear. So a lot of people don't have the confidence because they just don't know.
Right.
They haven't had experience, or they don't know if what they're asking is, you know, is that right? Or is that in the ballpark? Or is like,
sure.
They're just not sure. So for me, the way I instill confidence is let's make it known. Because one of the exercises that I have women do is talk to other people in the community and their network and what they make, right? So to get that comparison, and they have to talk to men. Like 50% of the people that they talk to have to be men. And it's amazing when women talk to men and realize that, hey, here's what he does. And he gave me this range. And I was thinking over here. And you can just see, right. You can just see it click that, well, if he's making in that range, I know I can deliver
right. The
same, if not better. So it's really just about the knowledge.
Right. So then how do you help women get the courage to take a step out of their comfort zone
yeah. And
to do like an exercise like that? Because yeah. They might not be comfortable doing
it. I can't control the actions that they do, right? So I can equip you with all the tools that will help you,
mm-hmm. But
you have to execute,
right?
And it doesn't have to be perfect.
No.
Right? But you have to do it. So one of the quotes that I live by is, everything you've ever wanted is on the other side of fear.
Absolutely.
So, but yeah.
That's the best quote ever.
So to me, it's just a leap of faith, you know, and what do you have to lose?
Nothing. And it goes to, so this is the analogy that one of my coaches used to say is, when you're driving down a street at night, your headlights only show like how many feet in front of you.
Yep.
We'll just say 200 feet in front of you, 300 feet in front of you. You're trusting that the road still exists beyond your headlights.
Right.
And that's exactly like, just trust in yourself and it's magic happens.
Right. Well, and I think part of it is a lot of people don't, they're afraid of a no, right? And it's like, well, let's think about the worst case scenario here, right? And people just go to like complete extremes,
totally.
Right? So it's just walking through like, how is that a realistic expectation and things like that. So it's just a lot of times just really having somebody with experience and knowledge to help people get along.
Yep, I love it. Okay, so you talked about you read books and all that stuff. Where do you get inspiration from?
Oh, that's a good one. My inspiration comes from my two girls. So I have two girls. I have a 9-year-old Natalie and a 7-year-old Emily. And honestly, they push me. They're my inspiration. They're fearless. And as
good.
I look at them, I realize all girls are. All girls are fearless. It's just that some of us, when we get through life, whether it's middle school or high school, fall down a little bit, right?
Or
start having doubts. So I look at them and they're my inspiration. And I want the world to be better for them, right?
Oh, me too.
And I want
you and
them,
me both.
You know.
I have two daughters too, similar ages.
And it's, you know, I look at mine and I don't know if all the kids are like that or not, but they are just fearless. You know, whether it's sports or asking, it's just, they just go for it. They know what they want, right? They know what they want. Like, why are kids great at negotiations? They know exactly what they want.
Yep. And they're not afraid.
And oh my gosh, the persistence, the
stamina. Oh. Let's talk about that.
So
they are persistent.
Right? And they will come up with creative ways, right?
Like, oh, absolutely. And they're kind of direct.
Like, there's no kind.
Kids are no passive aggressive.
No.
God, what does our culture do to them?
But I, you know, I look at them and they're my inspiration.
I love it. I'm the same. So what's the best advice you can give?
Okay, I can give. I don't like advices, right? So I think advices are kind of tricky. I always welcome advice, but actually a couple of years ago, somebody said, I can give you an advice, which is a progress because most people don't ask. They just give. And I said, you know what? You can always give me feedback or advice, but it's up to me whether I take it or discard it. And
Absolutely. He
was just taken aback, like, how, what? But I don't like advices because a lot of times they're situational and maybe a little bit judgmental. So I love quotes. Like, I collect quotes.
Perfect.
And I love quotes. So I will say two quotes that I kind of live by. And then, you know, I repeat it to my kids and I repeat it to, if I speak to, I just spoke to high schoolers. And those are the things that I say. So my two quotes or advice is, one, you get in life what you have the courage to ask for.
Oh, that's a good one.
And another one is, luck is the tenacity of purpose.
Yes. Yes.
So those are my advices.
You know, it's funny that you say the luck one, because my previous manager at Target, right before I left to start Talent Q, I would say, I'm just lucky.
Yeah.
And she's like, you are not lucky. No. You work hard and you earn every single hire that you've gotten here. And she really changed my mindset, because I'm like, luck has nothing to do with it. No. I work my ass off. Yeah. Like,
I think, you know, I was actually talking to somebody about that, and they said, well, there is an element of an opportunity being presented. And I'm like, yeah, but you still have that, you know, you have to, I don't know if you have to be at the right person at the right time, but you have to recognize the opportunity and act on it. And
absolutely.
It is up to you.
Right.
Nobody's going to do it for you.
No, so. Never. Perfect. Okay. We're going to the lightning round. I'm going to ask you questions very fast.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Short responses, Rosanna. You ready?
Sure.
Have you ever gotten a job through someone you know?
Absolutely.
What is the first word that comes to mind when thinking of searching for a new job?
Network.
What is your first paid job?
Babysitting.
Favorite question to ask when networking?
What are you passionate about?
Do you practice for interviews?
Yes.
Have you been fired?
No.
Damn, I have. What's a job you wanted but didn't get?
I don't have that one.
She's got all the jobs that she wanted, of course, because she's a negotiator. What site would you go to if you were looking for a new job?
LinkedIn. Networking.
Have you ever taken a counteroffer?
No.
Perfect. Ding, ding, ding.
I guess, what do you mean by counteroffer?
Like, if you...
I countered. And they countered, so I've taken that, but not from the current job.
Yeah, not from the current one. Yep. Okay. So where can everyone find you? Thank you so much for all the value bombs. The listeners are going to be like...
I hope so.
So excited. Everyone wants to know how to negotiate it. Yes. Yeah. Where can they find you?
Yep. So you can find us on LinkedIn. Bright Means Brave. You can find me, Rosanna Glazer, on LinkedIn.
Might need to spell that.
Which one? My name?
Your name, yeah. Spell it so they can know where to find you on LinkedIn.
First and last, RUZANAGLAESER.
Perfect.
And brightmeetsbrave.com.
Awesome. And for all of you listeners, if you've liked this, share it with your friends. If you're listening on iTunes, we beg for reviews. And we have an international presence. So thank you to all of our listeners in the United States as well as abroad. We are forever grateful. And if you want more information on career coaching, resume writing services, or where to find my book called I Hate Mondays to help you land your next job, go to careersandcocktails.com to find all the information there. And if you are a hiring leader who wants to find out the secrets to hiring the best talent, we have a free download guide that you can find at Careers and Cocktails as well. So until next time, cheers.
Cheers.